Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Elvira Isabel Moraga was not the stuff of literature. Few bemoan the memory loss of the unlettered. My mother and her generation of Mexican-American women was to disappear quietly, unmarked by the letter of memory, the memory of letter. But when our storytellers go, taking their unrecorded memory with them, we, their descendants, go too, I fear. That's the opening paragraph in the prologue of Shiri Moraga's new memoir, Native Country of the Heart. The Chicana feminist, playwright, and activist aims to preserve her mother's stories and memories, though her stories and memories were stolen by Alzheimer's prior to her death. Moraga is a professor in the Department of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She is also co-director of Las Maestras Center for Chicana Indigenous Thought and Art Practice with her partner, Celia Herrera Rodriguez. Moraga explains why this memoir is described as a literary memoir.
You know, it's neither a biography of my mom nor an autobiography of me. And I think that biographies and autobiographies are quite lengthy because one has a long life, hopefully. And certainly in the case of my mother, who was, died, looking at 91 years. But it really is a portrait. And I think that's why it's referred to as a literary memoir. It's a portrait of a relationship. And so it really covers those just kind of key periods where our lives really came together the most significantly. So the longest part of the book is really my early years before I left home in my early 20s, and then revisits my mother, like the two bookends of experiences when my mother becomes quite ill with Alzheimer's. And I've always had an intimate relationship with my mother, but the intensity of it and the sort of the regularity of it, the depth of it returned upon the last few years of her life when she was quite ill with Alzheimer's. And then it just touches in between. It touches those moments in my own life in terms of my own immediate family with my partner Celia and our shared children. Those periods in which it sort of reverb out of what I understand of family, how I make family, those cultural connections as a Chicana, and a very important trip I took with my mother to Mexico. Like, there's just key moments. And so the book is really not intending to tell all the facts of one's life, neither my mother's nor mine, but really how we shaped a relationship with each other that was very, really, really complex relationship. So I think the literary aspect of it is that it really is sort of honed around those key moments.
Your mother, who was born in 1914, her name is Elvira. She came from a pretty rough start. There's an anecdote that you share at the beginning of the book where her father hired Elvira out, 11 years old, as a cotton picker in California. And not only was she carrying her sack of cotton, but she was also carrying around her three-year-old brother. She was 11 years old. And that's sort of a starting point as to the kind of obstacles that Elvira had to overcome in her life, correct?
Yes. It wasn't just singularly her. It was also her other brothers and sisters as well. There was 9 children. So, it was often that he would pretty much contract the whole family out to work. Farm work certainly is not uncommon, particularly for, Mexicanos in the Southwest and particularly California, right? Given all the agricultural industry. But it is a common story, but I think kind of where my mother went with that, those beginnings is quite remarkable.
And it's also pointed out in the book quite frequently, mestizaje, the mixing of bloodlines, Mexican, Spaniards, white, indigenous people, and sort of the struggles that Mexican-Americans, such as you and myself, the background that we have, whether it's familiar to us or not, it somehow lingers. And, maybe you're not Mexican enough or you're too Mexican. In your case, your father was white, your mother was Mexican background, so you identified more with your Mexican side, whereas another one of your siblings probably identified more culturally with the white half. What kind of struggles did you encounter in your family with that type of mestizaje?
My mother was the only person among all her siblings that married an Anglo, and so we were the only, that we used to say, half and half, you know, kids in the family, and we have a huge family. It's funny because, I mean, I write a lot since I was quite, you know, in my 20s with, you know, my first book, This Bridge Called My Back. I wrote about being La Güera, you know, the lighter skinned, and of having this mixed blood identity. I don't think anybody in our family really has talked much about that. I think I am the one because I had to, I think, because I grew up culturally, you know, very, very identified, I think, as a woman, identified very, very much with my mother and my mother's family. My father didn't have relations, really. I mean, his mother died when I was 5, and his sister died early on as well, and we didn't really have a relationship, you know, with their family. So my dad was kind of the only gringo in the whole bunch, right? But I think that, you know, how my brother and how my sister looked at their own sort of being the mestizo's mestizo, you know, mixed blood also, but also one step more removed even in terms of having an Anglo father, they responded quite differently from me. I just have always, I mean, I think the book talks about that, is sort of the intimacy of my relationship with my mom, the complexity of it, that I kind of feel like that I'm a writer very much because of her, because she was not, she really only had a third grade education. She was the best storyteller in the world, you know, orally, but certainly was not versed in reading and writing. And so on a certain level, I felt that I inherited this legacy of telling story, but of course, I was blessed to have a good education. And so there was always for me this calling about accountability, you know, that I didn't want to just blend into so-called American culture. I found that so lonely, you know, in the sense that the values I knew in my home upbringing to me felt, as a Mexican, felt very foundational. Not that I don't have critiques. Much of my writing have also critiqued. Even this book really looks at the ways in which my mother passed on, you know, notions of patriarchy and sexism and, you know, all of that, and male superiority. I mean, I didn't need my dad to do that. My mother did that job for us, you know. So it's all complex, but I think that the fundamental sort of loyalty I felt, or calling I felt, to speak from a Chicana perspective, you know, and Chicana is not a word that my family uses. They call themselves Mexican Americans, or some even call themselves Hispanics, which is a misnomer, because they are mestizos. But, you know, once I became politicized, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, what I loved about that word is it also claimed that we were indigenous people. And to me, that's it's an empowering position to take. You know, my role or my calling, I don't know how to speak to that, except that, you know, and I always teach my students in terms of creative writing that they have to go home to be good writers. To me, my home was a Mexican home. And it was my job also to critique it, to make us a better people, you know, by not shying away from the danger zones, you know, the contradictions in who we are, the paradoxes, the ways we even pass on internalized racism and sexism, but also the incredible fuerza that we have in this book, Native Country. I think that my mother, for all of her contradictions, comes out as a person of true integrity and passion and hunger for freedom in a way she couldn't have. But I think that's probably what had mostly impacted me to seek freedom, not just in my own life, but the freedom of those I consider my people, which are the Mexicanos.
We're speaking today with Sheree Moraga, who's been writing for over 35 years. She's author of 1983's Loving in the War Years and is co-editor of the 1981 collection This Bridge Called My Back, Writings by Radical Women of Color. A fourth edition was published in 2015. Her 2011 collection of essays and poems is A Chicana Codex of Changing Consciousness, Writings 2000 to 2010. when we come back.
I also think we need to leave home to come home. There's really importance in that.
More with Sheree Moraga is coming up next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Sheree Moraga is considered one of the leading voices in Latino literature. Her literary memoir, Native Country of the Heart, traces her mother Elvira's past and how it came to shape Elvira's relationships with her family. Elvira worked in the cotton fields in California as a child. The Great Depression drove her family to Tijuana, where a 14-year-old Elvira worked as a hat check and cigarette girl in a casino. She married a white man and had three children, raising them in San Gabriel, California. Sheree couldn't leave home soon enough, attending Immaculate Heart College in Los Angeles and living for a time in New York. Like many young people with a wanderlust, Moraga eventually felt a calling to come back home. She returned to California to be a Chicana.
When I lived about 5 years in New York, and I was, you know, working in a women of color publishing house. I was doing a lot of activism work, et cetera. And nobody knew who even Chicanos were. It's not like it is now that there's, you know, a huge amount of immigration of Mexicans in, you know, all through the East Coast. That wasn't the case then. And so I felt like on a certain level, you know, I could just be more generically Latina and, you know, nobody would really, you know, like challenge me necessarily about the authenticity of what I wrote or the integrity of what I wrote culturally, the cultural integrity. It was just such a beautiful and important time for me. And I also think we need to leave home to come home. There's really importance in that. But the coming home for me was that my first solo authored book, Loving the Warriors, had just come out. And I had also, in that book, spoke also about being a lesbian, which was in the middle 80s in terms of our culture, was, it's not like now. I mean, it was completely taboo to write those things. And I felt like I had to go home and be who I was for us, you know, like I didn't want to disappear into, you know, this kind of generic identity on the East Coast. I felt like if I really was a person of my word, a woman of my word, then I needed to go back to my own, what I considered my own land base, and be all of those parts of myself, including queer, in an openly way, in the open book of my writing. And I've never regretted it for a minute, you know. There was a lot of opportunities that were waiting for me in New York, you know. Like, I was offered, like, this amazing sort of 3-year scholarship to Yale for my playwriting, because I also write plays. And I just said, no, I got to go home. You know, and like sometimes when those hard days, I went, oh, I hope I made the right decision. But of course I did, because you really do have to practice what you preach. And I feel like that is something I did learn from my upbringing. And, you know, I've come home and I made family here, you know, my own queer family and my partner of 21 years. We have children together. It's like, and that was before that was popular either, you know. So it was a hard time, but I felt like I would like to believe that my own life and those of my generation that made these kind of moves early on, that it's helped make others more free to do that as well.
Well, I'm curious as to how your mother and your family approached you coming out to them, because as you were mentioning, in a Mexican or Mexican-American family, I mean, it's still taboo now to be gay and Mexican. But did you risk alienation from your family when they found out that you were gay?
There's four sections in the book, and so that's kind of the most critical. Like, the first section, which is until I left home, I basically came out to my mother, who really mattered the most, you know. It was her decision. I mean, it was going to be her perspective that was going to impact the rest of my life around that. And the last chapter in that, in the first section, is basically my mother saying to me, literally, I'm packing to leave, and she says to me, "You're leaving with a secret." And she was absolutely right, because I had, you know, I had already graduated from college, and I was living in an apartment, you know, in LA, but I had this whole sort of secret life. So she called me on it. She said, "You're leaving with a secret." And I felt like this was enormously courageous of her, because I think she knew the answer anyway. And I couldn't tell her. And finally, I didn't even have to say it, she knew. So then she said to me, "Is how could you think there was anything in this life that you could do that you wouldn't be my daughter?" And I think that's all we need to hear. For us, that was the opening. That meant I could leave home and return, and not just return artificially, but return with all of who I was. And it wasn't mean that it was easy between us or that everything was accepted. But she knew, and I think I say this to all the queer people out there, you know, it give them a chance to love you with all of who you really, really are, you know, because if you don't give them that chance, you are assured of a half relationship. And I think the thing about, you know, queerness, both genderqueer or your sexuality, if your sexuality is about who you love and you have to keep that secret from the people you love the most, you have to free that channel up. And only you can decide, only that person can decide when's the time to do it. But to my mother's credit, she really felt that I was leaving in a way that I would not be coming home as a whole self to her, you know, and she was absolutely right. She had more guts than me, you know. So that's a really, really pivotal moment in the book that then kind of takes us on to the rest of our relationship. That was before I went to New York. And the years I was in New York, we still stayed so connected. Given to my mother's not a, I wasn't a young woman. She was born in 1914. She was raised by her mother, who was born 1880-something. So this is like some really, really fundamental historical moments, you know, when our own people are confronting these new points of view and lifestyles.
Well, there's so much I want to talk to you about the book, but we don't have the time. But I do want to ask you about the title of the book, Native Country of the Heart. Can you explain that for us?
It took me a long time. The book had many, many titles, and that title really comes out of one of the very last lines of the book before the epilogue. You know, I went to Catholic schools my whole life and all that. I mean, as, you know, as a kid, and there is a section where I talk about sort of this knowledge of, like, growing up in California and so close to the mission and Catholic schools, of really feeling like there was always, and among my classmates, a very, very strong Native presence that we were told to deny, not only as Mexicans, but also that the very brutal history of the mission system. And so the book talks about, it goes into that somewhat, and also by virtue of my name, Moraga, which also has a relationship to Southern California. And that line, the Native Country of the Heart, is really what I believed the book was driving toward. Because when I'm talking about going home, that to me as a Chicana, one of the most fundamental ways in which we go home is to also understand that we are indigenous to this land. And I think that's a profound place of knowing. It's not about, like, trying to appropriate something that's not ours. It really is talking about a profound side of ethnicity that we're taught in this country to ignore. The book, I believe, really does get there. I would like to feel it a profoundly emotional place that also creates a certain political consciousness, right? But it's a simple sight when the book, you know, I just talked about after my mother's death, of really sitting in front of this fireplace of the Winnemem-Wintu, who are some northern people, northern Native people, a small California tribe, amazing, amazing people. And to sit in this, what I call the woman's fireplace, I felt like that was really my own sight of kind of repairing all the damages that had been done. And I referred to the women's fireplace as the Native Country of the Heart. So it really is that spirit place, I believe, that's inside of me and inside of us as Raza, you know, if we have the courage to look at it. And I don't mean steal it. I mean just find it in some place within ourselves that feels like it has grounding to it. You know, my people are, they may be from that area, and I know they are from Sonora, the Sonora Desert. I have always felt that from the time I was really, really little, that those origin stories are truly there for me. And what I notice among, and I teach a lot of young Raza, and I see what happens to them when they begin to think that maybe they aren't Hispanics, but in fact, they are really true also indigenous people, and what that does about their sense of belonging here that kind of predates the United States and also helps them to also receive those folks that are coming in these caravanas with a much more open heart and sight of identification as opposed to rejection.
Cherie Moraga is professor in the Department of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Her literary memoir is Native Country of the Heart. Moraga is a playwright and author of Waiting in the Wings, Portrait of a Queer Motherhood, Loving in the War Years, and Heroes and Saints and Other Plays. Moraga is co-director of Las Maestras Center for Chicana Indigenous Thought and Art Practice with her partner, Celia Herrera Rodriguez. To hear Cherie Moraga read an excerpt from Native Country of the Heart, go to tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. And our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.